Is a moon mission lost in space? And could we be sipping cocktails in orbit? You're listening to Are We There Yet? The radio show exploring space exploration. Hi, I'm Brendan Byrne. As humans head to the moon for exploration and maybe even permanent residence in the future, knowing where water is or was on the moon is vital for these long-duration stays. The goal of one NASA mission, Lunar Trailblazer, is to identify where and how water is stored beneath the lunar surface. But that mission appears to be lost in space. We'll speak with Joe Palca, a former NPR science correspondent, about Trailblazer. Then, what if you could have a margarita or an old-fashioned in orbit or even on the moon? The book Alcohol in Space explores the tie that alcohol has to human culture and the companies working towards making booze orbital. Now it's a documentary. We'll speak with filmmaker Sam Burbank and author Chris Carberry about how space could have happy hours in the future. That's ahead on Are We There Yet? On February 26th, the SpaceX Falcon 9 lifted off from Launch Complex 39A at the agency's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Its main job was to send the Intuitive Machines Athena lander on a mission to the lunar South Pole, but it was also carrying a dishwasher-sized spacecraft called Lunar Trailblazer that was supposed to go into orbit around the moon and map the distribution and abundance of water on the moon. On March 6, Athena landed on the moon, sort of. According to a NASA press release, Intuitive Machines said images collected later confirmed the lander was on its side, preventing it from fully operating the drill and other instruments before its batteries were depleted. The space agency declared the mission over just 13 hours after the probe touched down. Lunar Trailblazer had its own set of problems. The probe separated from the Falcon second stage as planned, and the Deep Space Network received a radio signal indicating Trailblazer's systems had powered up. But then, radio contact was lost. Based on the signals that were received and ground tracking data, mission managers believe the spacecraft is slowly spinning and is probably in a low power state. Although it's too late to make the necessary maneuvers to go into the planned scientific orbit, it may still be possible to gather some of the data about the moon Trailblazer was designed to collect, if communications can be reestablished. Joe Palca has been collaborating with mission principal investigator Bethany Ellman for nearly 3 years to tell the story of the development of Lunar Trailblazer. And even if you're just a casual listener to NPR, you've probably heard Joe. He was an NPR science correspondent for more than three decades. He retired in 2022. I am a huge fan of his work and so happy to have you here. Joe joins us now to talk about the mission. Joe, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here. Love the show.
Thanks, Joe. Well, first of all, let's talk about how you got interested in Lunar Trailblazer. Where does your story start?
Well, I was thinking about this. It's not really so much Lunar Trailblazer that I'm fascinated by, although I think almost every space mission is interesting in one way or another. It's just Bethany Ellman is such a compelling individual. I've talked to her many times. She knows Mars. She knows the moon. She knows just a ton about space exploration, and she's very agreeable and interesting to talk to. And one of the things that bugs me about being a reporter always is we come in at the very end, it landed or something else happened, but there's a whole story, years in the making, that lead up to this moment of mission success or failure or something. And I was frustrated as a reporter that I never got to do those stories. So I figured, well, as a retired reporter, I got the time, I'll follow along and follow the thing as long as I could. I didn't get at the very beginning because the mission was selected in, I think 2019, but I got involved in 2022.
I am envious of the time that you had to report this mission, and I'm glad you're here to talk about what you found. But let's start from kind of broadly. What is this mission all about?
Well, Lunar Trailblazer is designed to map and characterize the water on the moon. When I grew up, water on the moon was like an impossibility, but it turns out, no, it's not an impossibility. Scientists have pretty sure there is water on the moon. What they don't know, is it a lot or a little? It's certainly not the lakes or oceans, despite geological features like the Sea of Tranquility.
We really don't know how much water is on the moon, and the estimates vary widely. And that's one of the reasons that Lunar Trailblazer is actually really important science.
So that's Bethany Ellman from a recording we made in July 2022. Lunar Trailblazer has two instruments. One is called HVCM cubed. It's a multi-wavelength imaging spectrometer, and the other is the Lunar Thermal Mapper. And the readings from these two instruments will tell Ellman and her team, or intend to tell Ellman and her team, the nature of the water. Is it ice? Is it frost? Is it water molecules bound to rocks? And it will also help them infer the amount of water that's there.
We have four science objectives. One is to map the form, distribution, and abundance of water on the sunlit portions of the moon mm-hmm. and understand how it varies with rock type, soil, and the age of the lunar soil and latitude. The second objective is to monitor, to look for changes as a function of time of day and temperature of the lunar surface in water on the sunlit side. The third objective is to understand the form, distribution, and abundance of water in permanently shadowed regions at the poles. And the fourth objective is to understand the association of temperature variability with water, including understanding any gradients and how those are affected. And then as bonus science, we get amazing compositional maps of rock type and mineralogy on the moon for each of these sites, and will provide reconnaissance for landed missions.
And I think you can hear in her voice the excitement that she kind of gets when she's talking about this. This is her stuff. And, you know, it's the landed missions that business that makes it easy-ish to explain why the why of Lunar Trailblazer. If astronauts could find water on the moon, then they wouldn't have to drag it with them from Earth.
Yeah, dragging with them from Earth would be very costly, and water is a very important resource, especially if you do want to live and work on the moon for an extended period of time. I'm sure these future astronauts, not you and I, but these Artemis astronauts are really interested in these findings, right, Joe?
Oh, yeah. This is when you ask NASA why this is happening, it's all part of a program to make the moon a place where astronauts could spend some time. And it's not just for drinking the water. I mean, the water can be broken into hydrogen and oxygen to make fuel or to make oxygen for breathing. So there's a lot of value to having water around. But Bethany's a scientist, and you know, she says future colonists aren't the only ones who are interested in knowing more about the water on the moon.
Yeah, I mean, the water on the moon has interest to many different groups. I'm interested in, why is there water there at all? Where did it come from? Are these the products of the moon's volcanic outgassing? Are these the remnants, the record of comets and asteroids that have entered into the Earth-Moon system and hit, you know, over the last millions of years, billions of years? What's the time scale? We won't be able to answer all of these questions, but we'll start to be able to bracket it by understanding where the water is, how much is there. And then, you know, the maps of Lunar Trailblazer will be the maps that are the guide for future landed missions to go in there with rovers and drills and mass spectrometers, maybe even sample return to really investigate what's going on.
I'm going with volcanic outgassing, Joe, because that's just a fun term to say there.
Yeah, I'd love to. Can't say that too often.
Can't say it too often. So we mentioned at the start of this conversation, Joe, that it seems to be that Lunar Trailblazer is in peril. Do we have any idea about what's wrong with this mission?
Not really. I mean, NASA's been writing rather terse blogs about it. The concern seems to be that the power has fallen too low to get the radio to turn on, which is odd, since when a spacecraft detects a serious problem with some crucial system, it goes into safe mode. And when it does that, it's basically supposed to turn off all non-essential instruments, point its solar panels towards the sun to charge the batteries, and await instructions. But that isn't happening. And the interesting thing is astronomers have been tracking the spacecraft, and so they know exactly where it is and what its trajectory is. NASA may have some thoughts about what's gone wrong, but they aren't sharing them. But, you know, from the first interview I did in 2022, Bethany made it clear that Lunar Trailblazer was a different kind of beast for NASA, what the agency dubbed a simplex mission.
Simplex is the Small Innovative Missions for Planetary Exploration. It's an acronym that works, actually. It's a relatively new line in NASA, and I think it's actually incredibly exciting. I really believe in the potential of this class of mission. It takes advantage of the fact we have many more launches. The cost of launch has gone down. The cost of spacecraft components has gone down as we have more and more satellites in Earth orbit. And it's time for planetary exploration to take advantage of this.
So Lunar Trailblazer costs in the neighborhood of $90 million, which is about a tenth of the standard planetary exploring mission, which typically costs $1 billion or more. Elman says Simplex missions are implemented in a risk category called Class D.
Most NASA missions that you hear about in the public are the big guys are Class B or Class A. Class D means you accept certain risks of failure. You accept certain streamlining of checking processes in the interests of basically balancing risk, cost, posture for the overall program. So it's a different paradigm for NASA. So we're part of this grand experiment.
Accepting certain risks as part of this grand experiment for NASA. That's interesting. Joe Palca, what are the chances that Bethany and her team will be able to revive the mission?
It's unclear at this point. It left Earth with a fair amount of propellant, possibly enough to get it into an elliptical orbit around the moon rather than the circular one it was aiming for, but still enough to do some science. But right now, hard to say.
Joe Palca is a science journalist. He spent decades on NPR's science desk before retiring in 2022. He's been following the Lunar Trailblazer mission and will continue to follow that mission and join the show to tell us more about its story and the outcome of these rescue efforts. Joe, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you bet.
Still to come, could space travelers have more access to booze in orbit?
And these people involved in the alcohol business who realize, whoa, this could be a part of space. Their kid-like nature jumps out, and it's very compelling.
That's just ahead when Are We There Yet continues. But first, for our local listeners, we've got a great event, Friday, March 28th. We're calling it The Scoop on Scopes. Join us at the Museum of Arts and Sciences in Daytona Beach, Florida, for an exciting live taping of Are We There Yet? I'll be joined by a panel of scientists and astronomers to dive into the fascinating world of telescopes and their crucial role in our understanding of the universe. If you've got a burning question about telescopes or space, we'll have a Q&A session so you can ask them to me and the panel. Admission is free for the event, but please register. You can find more information on cfpublic.org. And if you can't make it to the show or you're not in the area, be sure to stay listening. We'll post it as a podcast episode soon. Are We There Yet? Is back in a minute. You're listening to Are We There Yet? I'm Brendan Byrne. The next two decades are full of moon madness as NASA and partners explore the moon and send astronauts to lunar surface as part of the Artemis missions. And one mission, called IPEX, is sending a robot bulldozer and dump truck to the moon to transport soil across the lunar surface. It's to help gather supplies for those long-duration astronauts that are found trapped within the soil, or regolith, of the moon. But while this bulldozer dump truck hybrid roams the lunar surface, it's the people on Earth making sure the mission goes smoothly. We'll speak with Florida Tech's Debbie Karstens about her work on designing the mission control room. That's coming up on Are We There Yet? But for now, we're talking about alcohol in space. Space travelers and visitors to the International Space Station have had alcohol during their stay, which includes celebratory champagne. But having a casual cocktail on a random Tuesday in orbit doesn't really happen. Yet. Should alcohol be more accessible in space? In the book Alcohol in Space by Chris Carberry, he explores that very question and the idea that alcohol should be more available so people can relax and have an important part of Earth's culture while away from their home planet. And director Sam Burbank turned the book into a documentary. Our producer Marion Summerall spoke with Chris Carberry, the CEO of Explore Mars and author of the books Alcohol in Space and Music in Space, alongside director, filmmaker, and one of the principals of Culture in Space Productions, Sam Burbank. Here's part of that interview.
Chris and Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
I want to start with talking about Culture in Space Productions. This production company produces documentary films explaining human culture and space. But it's not just about rockets, right? Space isn't just about rockets. We're talking about culture in space. So there's this documentary film. It's on Amazon, Alcohol in Space. Let's talk a little bit about Alcohol in Space and maybe the book.
Chris, why don't you get started? You wrote the book.
You know, and thank you to Sam. Sam's a wonderful documentary filmmaker, and I approached him with the book, Alcohol and Space, kind of browbeat him into doing the film. And it just turned into a wonderful journey, looking at all these passionate people outside the traditional space industry who want to participate in the space industry. And so the film came together well. Obviously, he couldn't get the entire book in the film. That wouldn't work. But really focused on three primary storylines, looking at a champagne producer, a scotch whiskey producer, and a beer producer, all that have their own particular space product, you know, ways of utilizing their products in space and trying to really build excitement for their brands, but they also try to really, you know, advance technologies that'll go well beyond, you know, the alcohol industry. And that's one of the exciting things about culture and space, to look at all those things that are not rockets.
Yeah, just as Chris was mentioning some of the participants, you know, I think for many people, especially of our generation, space was and remains to some extent, but when we were younger even, was just this unobtainable, impossibly cool thing. And I think for many people, including all the participants that Chris mentioned, the champagne producer, the yeast in space, the aging of scotch whiskey in space. For all of these people, it was kind of like, God, man, I ended up in the scotch whiskey business, but maybe there's some way I could be a part of space. Or I ended up in the champagne business, but wow, it looks like I'm going to be a part of humans' endeavor into space, even though we're not building spacesuits or pumps for rocket engines. And I think when we talk about culture in space, what does the word culture mean? Culture is a word used to describe a level of development and capability and what the people are interested in at a given point in time for various places on Earth. So for culture in space, it's everything except the rockets and the spacesuits and essentially like the military regimen of the kind of training that was done initially in the space program. Culture is who we are at a moment in time with a society. And that's warts and all, you know. The idea of alcohol as a elixir, as a way to sort of modify that. I mean, we all know the story of the angry drunk, right? That you don't want that in space, you know? Oh, Barb's terrific till she has a glass of champagne. But on the other side of that, people need a way to let off steam. People need a way to drop their guard and giggle and have a good time.
This is also, you know, we hope the next film will be the music of space. And that's another thing that really plays an important role up on the International Space Station. Your music is always in the background. Astronauts bring up their own playlists. There are two guitars up there, a keyboard. There's always music, and it helps to bring multicultural crews together, you know, unite around that music. And it helps really solidify relationships. I think it offsets the stress and offsets potential conflicts between crew members who are not, you know, on the ground, whose countries aren't always getting along.
For me, Chris, as a having participated in a few of these Mars simulations or space simulations, music as much as anything else was a way to unwind and to check out. And we've talked about that a lot, the ability for music to kind of put you in a different mindset, a different zone.
But it goes to show how, you know, we're talking about alcohol in space, we're talking about music in space, and as humans, we're kind of moving towards long duration missions. And these things that we're talking about are vital things that we have here on Earth that help people relax and, like you said, enjoy themselves. Would you say that's kind of more the goal of this, right? Is eventually, if humans are going to space for longer periods of time or other planets, that they have these resources that they can just kind of keep them a little bit more grounded and maybe connected to Earth?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, this is part of this is, you know, we assume as people, more and more people go into space and they go in as tourists, or they go to work in space and not responsible for all the lives of everybody around them except for common sense stuff. You know, they're going to want leisure time. You know, right now the model has been professional astronauts that are pretty much busy every second of the day. Yeah, they have some leisure time, but we have to expect humans are going to want their leisure time, be able to bring their interests up, you know, so they'll explore, find things, interesting, fun things to do, literature, music, art.
So your book, Chris, when you approached it with Sam, I read something, Sam, that you said you were just absolutely captivated by the book. Let's dive into a little bit about the book. And, you know, maybe for people who haven't read the book or watched the documentary yet, let's kind of take a step back. And can you give us kind of synopsis about the book? And then, Sam, can you talk a little bit about the documentary?
I'm actually going to jump in front of Chris really quickly, if you don't mind, because I'm a big fan of the book. And it's hard to talk about your own work, but I will say this. So Chris sent me a copy of the book. We've both been involved in these, I guess you'd call it the space advocacy world for a long time and just involved in space exploration. Chris sent me a copy of the book and said, read this thing. And I said, I don't have time to read it. But he said, you just got to read it. So finally got around to it. And what he did with this book, the thing that's so extraordinary about this book is that he ties together the history of alcohol throughout humanity with the next step of humanity, which is space exploration. And the history of alcohol with humanity is one of the most fascinating and mysterious relationships. Everywhere you go, you find evidence for people going out of their way to create fermentation and enjoy the effect of alcohol. And so I would recommend the book even to non-space people, simply as a jumping off point to think about that issue. But then you'll get pulled into the people doing the experiments, because again, when people have any possibility to get involved in space, they jump at it. And these people involved in the alcohol business who realize, whoa, this could be a part of space, their kid-like nature jumps out, and it's very compelling.
Yeah, no, thank you, Sam. And you know, right, it was very important to me to create that historical context to connect these things. And you know, I also talk about how it's been utilized in science fiction, and science fiction authors for over a century have just assumed alcohol would be there because that's part of human culture. But I also look at, people always say, will they drink in space? Well, that ship has sailed, because I also tell the stories of the many, many, many times people have consumed alcohol in space since the beginning of the space age. So telling those interesting stories and the role it has played. For instance, another thing up on ISS and the Mir before that, crews would come along, you know, get together, particularly when there's a new crew, that often have receptions where, and they'd bring, you know, have cognac and have little shots of cognac with the new crew, once again, to create kind of that camaraderie, that bonding between the crews. But I also want to talk about other things as well. And, you know, one thing was, if we want to do this, if we want to produce alcohol and consume alcohol in space when we're away from Earth, you know, like on Mars or something, where we don't have easy access to the materials, what would that take? So I also looked at technology as needed, which is primarily agriculture. Without agriculture, you're not going to have any alcohol in space. And so what crops would be most likely to be used? Would we use the crops we use here on Earth? Those ones are really easy. We know that you work well here on Earth, but they might not be the best options on Mars. You know, will we use algae? Will we use whatever remaining biomass that we have left? You know, so you never know. And looking at this, and what would that be like? Will we create whole new categories of alcohol that are based on that unique feedstock, as well as like different gravity levels, atmospheric pressure, you know, the terroir, or basically, you know, if you're using like Martian soil, will you absorb the taste of the Martian soil? So there are so many variables I looked at, and how the advancement of space agriculture is critical to it and can help advance space agriculture. An example of this would be Budweiser. Anheuser-Busch did an experiment a few years back looking at barley in space. And it was great. They announced they wanted to be the first beer manufacturer on Mars. We thought it was more of a joke and a PR stunt. But then they sent up 4 barley experiments. And this was great, not only if you like want to have a beer or a whiskey in space one day, but I think it was exciting for the broader reasons, because they were doing a space agriculture experiment. And it was being funded by a non-traditional space company. Who would ever have thought that Anheuser-Busch would have conducted a space agriculture experiment?
And I guess to wrap this up a little bit, Chris and Sam, when people read the book or watch the documentary, or both, because we hope for both, what do you hope the biggest thing they take away from it is?
You know, beyond the whole topic of alcohol in space, you know, which I'm a fan of also, with it responsibly, of course, just talking about the stories as well as the dangers of it. But beyond that, I want people to look at it and realize that space these days, space is not just about rocket companies. Pretty much anybody can be part of the space industry. People often look, you look at, you know, rocket companies, you know, they have wonderful videos of ships landing on Mars. What they don't usually add to that is, how are they going to eat? How are they going to breathe? How are they going to drink? How, you know, what sort of medical technology is going with them? What's going to entertain them along the way? All these different elements that are required for human health and mental health and happiness. And these are the sorts of things that companies around the country and the world can participate in now that we seem to have the rockets well underway.
I'll jump in with a thought of my favorite documentary is a documentary from Earl Morris called Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control. It's about four seemingly very different individuals all at the top of their game. There's a lion tamer. There's somebody studying blind mole rats. There's an incredible hedge trimmer. And then there's this man who has an idea to send myriad small robots to Mars. And that's where the term fast, cheap, and out of control comes from. And in that film, what you're really seeing is that I think the message from the film is that passion always looks the same. It's always full of joy and limitless energy. And that's the thing I saw in all the people in the film who I was allowed to interview and get to know. And I've been doing documentaries on space science for literally a couple of decades now. And that's always the key thing, is a childlike joy of exploration. And no matter what part you're doing, whether you're working on the spacesuit or whether you're trying to figure out how to do an experiment to see how whiskey would age in space. And so that's what I would say is, if you love humanity, if you really like seeing enthusiastic, joyful people, you'll read about them in the book and you'll really see them in the film. The film is full of playful, almost ridiculously enthusiastic people, and what's amazing is that their experiments work and they're doing their part for our future off Earth. So that's I think what my pitch.
Alcohol in Space, the movie, is available on Amazon Prime Video, as well as the book is available on Amazon. And the book that we also talked about, The Music of Space, is also available on Amazon, with the film soon coming out. Chris and Sam, thank you so much for joining us to talk about Alcohol in Space. And I'm looking forward to hearing what comes with the future. Maybe we all can be sipping champagne on Mars within a few decades.
Sign me up.
Thank you. We look forward to joining you.
That was Chris Carberry, CEO of Explore Mars and author of the books Alcohol in Space and Music in Space, director, filmmaker, and one of the principals of Culture and Space Productions, Sam Burbank. They were speaking with our producer, Marion Summerall. That's going to do it for this week's show. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to the show's podcast feed so you never miss an episode. Do that on the Central Florida Public Media app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the NPR app, YouTube, really wherever you get your podcasts. Stay connected with the show. Follow us on social media. We're on Instagram and Facebook. Our handle is at @AWTYSpace. And if you got an idea for a future episode of the show, or you think you'd be a good guest, well, pitch us. We're at arewetheryet@cfpublic.org. More space coverage online, visit cfpublic.org/space. Are We There Yet is a production of Central Florida Public Media. Our producer is Marion Summerall. Our intern is Allison Castillo. Editorial guidance from Latoya Dennis. Support for Are We There Yet comes from our listeners. Until next week, I'm Brendan Byrne. Thanks for listening.